Welcome back to the Make or Break Show, where each week we bring you stories of incredible makers and the make or break moments that have defined them along the way. I'm our host, Brandon Cullum, and this week we chat with Mikey the Maker, a part-time woodworker who is getting full-time results. We get into how he has built his Instagram presence to nearly 80,000 followers in just 2 years and work with companies like Woodpeckers and WorkbenchCon. All right, welcome back to another episode of the show. We have another fun one for you this week. And good night. It has gotten cold. I hope you guys are staying warm out in your shop. I'd actually love to know how you guys are staying warm. Hit me up over on Instagram at the Make or Break Shop. I'd love to feature some of your suggestions on the show next week. But thank you guys so much. This has been fun to rock and roll into 2019, and we have a fun guest for you this week with Mikey the Maker. But before we get into that, a couple of housekeeping things. First off, we've just gone over 10,000 followers on Instagram. So you guys do follow me over there at the Make or Break Shop. Thank you so much. It's been a cool journey just to really get plugged into the community, as well as get to share a lot of the cool things that you guys are working on, as well as some of my projects. And so to celebrate that, I am doing a giveaway, and you can head over to makeorbreakshop.com/giveaway and to get all the information about that. But we've got some fun stuff by tools today. We've got some bits and blades, as well as some cool jigs by Rockler, some sandpaper over at Gator, and a bunch of fun stuff. So if you guys can head over there, there's going to be multiple ways to win, as well as multiple prizes that you can win. So it's not going to be one big thing that's just going to go to one person, but you guys will have a bunch of chances. So again, that is makeorbreakshop.com/giveaway. And before we get into this, as always, thank you so much to the wonderful supporters over on Patreon. You guys really are helping keep the lights on. And so if you guys would like to support this show and keep these interviews coming out on a weekly basis, you can head over to patreon.com/makeorbreakshow. All right, jumping into this week's show, we're hanging out with Mikey the Maker. You guys might recognize Mikey. He was pretty involved with WorkbenchCon, who we had on earlier this year, and it's actually coming up here in the middle of February. I think there's some still tickets left, but you guys don't know what that is. If you are a maker and you're wanting to get into the world of sponsorships and content around your business, this is really a conference for that. So it's not just like a woodworking conference like Woodworking in Atlanta, but really if you are trying to build up a content business, not necessarily a furniture business, it's great. But anyway, so he helped out with them. Last year was their very first one outside in Atlanta, and he did a lot of their marketing, especially leading up to it over on Instagram. And you will quickly learn that he has got a pretty deep background in marketing on his own page. So Mikey the Maker over on Instagram, he's got nearly 80,000 followers, which is wild. And what's even crazier is he's only been a woodworker for a couple of years. But for the day job, he actually works for Salesforce, and he designs marketing automations and email marketing and all that kind of stuff for clients. And so it's kind of cool because we're getting some of the tactics that he uses on the day job as consulting to other businesses, how that applies to his own business. And then he's also kind of segued that into working with Woodpeckers. And so a lot of you probably recognize Woodpeckers. If you've seen any of his Instagram photos, there's lots of red tools, and they aren't just those nice Bessie clamps, but those really cool Woodpecker jigs that you guys can see there. But he helps them out, and he gets into what it's like to work with sponsors. And what's really cool about him is that he still has his day job. And so he's doing this all on the side. There was a phase that he talks about where he was basically working two full-time jobs. So he'd put in his 40 hours during the week, and he'd also be doing his 40 hours at night. And right now he's kind of at a transition point, kind of deciding where he wants to take the next step, which is leading right into WorkbenchCon, which is coming up, like I said, in just over a month. So this is a fun one, as always. One of the things that I've heard from you guys is you want to hear from some more people that are kind of like us, so maybe not the Jimmy Duresses of the world, who have already kind of been down this track, in his case, several decades ago, but guys just getting started but still having lots of success. And I think Mikey is a great example of that. Like I said, he's only been at this for about 2 years, and he's doing a really, really good job. So without further ado, let's jump into our interview with Mikey the Maker. Hey guys, welcome back to the Maker Break Show. We're hanging out with Mikey the Maker today, calling in from Houston, Texas. Thank you so much for jumping on tonight. And I know before we started, we've gone back and forth on dates and everything, but thank you so much for making time in your schedule and chatting with us.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me, Brandon. Happy to be on the show.
Totally, man. So I first saw your stuff when I was getting more into the Instagram side of things, and I kept seeing like images of your shop, and I was like, my gosh, like this guy's a sweet shop, and but he's still like working a day job, but he's making some crazy stuff. So to get people that maybe they don't have much of your background on the making side of things, like what is your typical projects? Is it more furniture stuff? Like what are you kind of doing in your shop?
Definitely. I've really been all over the board as far as different projects that I've tried to do in my shop. I've only been a woodworker and maker for 2 years now. So in that time, I've really tried a little bit of everything. But I would say I really gear more towards building custom furniture and things of that nature.
So 2 years, man, that's crazy. I feel like you've got not only on social, but there's what you've got in your shop. You've grown that pretty fast from what I can tell.
Well, when you said something about, you know, the pictures in my shop, I was going to drop a little line in there that I actually am terrible at making things. I just am really good at buying tools.
It feels like the tool pictures are what work the best on social media anyway. So there you go. That's yeah. Going great. So is your shop, is it like a one car, two car garage? What do you?
Yeah. So my old shop that I started in Indianapolis before we moved to Houston this summer, I was working out of a two car garage, and I occupied about 3/4 of it at that time. And when my wife and I were moving back to her hometown in Houston, I had a stipulation that I had to have a shop. Yeah. And so the house that we settled on has a detached three-car garage. It's about 800 square feet, and the whole thing works as my wood shop.
When are you normally in there? Are you like a nights and a weekends?
Yeah, definitely nights and weekends. And lately, I haven't been in the shop as much, to be completely honest. But over the last couple of years, when I was really grinding and I was trying to learn so much about woodworking and I was making stuff all the time, the time that I was in the shop was generally like 8 p.m. to 2 a.m. every night. Wow. For probably 18 months.
Good Lord. At that point, and we'll back up in a minute, but like what was kind of driving you? Like to be in the shop, was it like, were you trying to build towards something, or was you just kind of getting obsessed with a new thing?
Was more the obsession. I think it was just the eagerness to continue to learn more and to get better. Because making things, especially when you've never picked up a saw before, can be pretty intimidating, and you always have to start very simple. So I was building things with screws and glue and 2x4s. But wanted to be able to get away from that and start to build more fine furniture. And yeah. I knew that the only way to do that was to put in the time.
I feel like a lot of us started with like the Anna White plans.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Shanty to chic for me. My first project, I always joked with my buddies. I don't know the lady that runs this blog very well, but I just always thought the name was funny because I got the plans from it. But the site is called hertoolbelt.com.
Oh, really? That's awesome.
Yeah. That's the website where I got my first set of plans.
That's great. My wife will send me like Shanty to Chic stuff all the time. And I mean, their stuff is, they do an incredible job
For sure.
with their plans. And so does Anna and all this folks kind of getting people into it. So it doesn't sound like then you worked a ton with your hands then, or like, I guess the making stuff kind of happened a little bit later. Is that right? Or were you also kind of DIY and stuff when you were a kid?
No. So I didn't grow up in a family where anybody was a craftsperson or craftsman or woman in my family whatsoever. I had an uncle who worked on cars, but I was never around him while he was doing that. And when I built my first project, the day that I decided to do it was the first time I had ever used a saw in my life.
How long ago was that?
2 years ago.
So, exactly. so the full thing started 2 years ago. Wow. And it was, you said that first project, was it just like you needed something in your house and that was kind of the motivation for it?
Yeah. I mean, the way the story goes is that for Christmas 2 years ago, my dad got me a 5-piece set of DeWalt drill driver circular saw. And, that was more just a gift because I was a homeowner and, it seemed like I probably needed some tools and kind of clues you in on how much experience I had because I had zero tools. So my dad got me this set and I was playing around with it and I was thinking, you know, now that I've got these tools, I should try to make something. And I got on the internet and I went to hertoolbelt.com and I found plans for one of those wall hanging drill stations.
Yeah.
And so I got the supplies I needed for it and I made that. And when I put that thing on the wall and I took a step back and I saw what I made, that's when it clicked. From that point on, for the next 18 months, I spent about 40 hours in my shop and just continued making and making and making and trying to learn along the way.
What was it that clicked? Like when you stepped back, like was it just the fact you had built something yourself? Like what was it?
Yeah, it was more like, because I've always been very materialistic.
Yeah.
I love having like the newest, latest and greatest gadgets and technology, cool shoes, all that stuff, right? And all of that, I always just forked over my own money for, and then, you know, it came to me in like a shipping box or whatever. And once I had made something and I knew that, you know, it was unique because I was the one that made it and I put the hard work into it, I think I got a lot of satisfaction out of that. And then as I continued to do it, I think it just grew on me more and more. I sat at a desk all day for my day job. So being able to get in the shop and do something like that was a perfect way to get my mind off things.
So what is your day job then?
I work as a software consultant for a company called Salesforce.
Yeah.
And specifically, we work on email marketing. So I work on a team of consultants that work with some of the biggest brands in the world, helping them to strategize and come up with email campaigns so that we can fill everybody's email inbox with spam.
But so you are deep in the marketing side of things then?
Correct.
That's cool. We use Salesforce on the CRM side at my day job. So,
oh, awesome. Yeah.
Definitely. I actually have some guys that work. Oh, man. They were bought out by Salesforce. They work in Atlanta. Pardot?
Is that?
Okay.
Yeah. They're the other functional marketing arm of Salesforce in addition to the part of the company that I work for.
Gotcha. They both, I went to school in Atlanta, and so they both went to me there. So I guess, because is Salesforce based in Atlanta? Is that right? Or is it somewhere else?
Salesforce is based in San Francisco, but through the acquisition of Pardot and another company called Buddy Media, we have a big presence in Atlanta.
Gotcha. Maybe that's what I was thinking.
It serves as one of our hubs.
Where did you go to college?
I went to school at Indiana University. So in my home state, and got a degree in computer technology, information sciences. And after college, I actually went and lived in Minneapolis for 3 years, working at Target's corporate headquarters.
Oh, cool.
Supporting their internal marketing department using data analytics.
So were you thinking far down the tech route, the whole Silicon Valley scene? Like, was that the type of stuff that you were into?
I think it was a little bit of that, and it was more akin to how I progressed through this whole maker community. Is like I just kept doing things, and then one thing would lead to another. But finding my way to Salesforce was a unique road for sure, because we were a product of acquisition as well. So the company that I worked for was bought by Salesforce, and that was 5 years ago. And so a lot of stuff has kind of gotten me to where I'm at today.
That's cool. You're the first one that has your day job is marketing. Cause I feel like a piece of this, the making side of things, especially for people that are wanting to do it. I mean, and you know, for like a full time or actually make money from it. That's a piece that is a whole nother skill set that, that you've got to learn.
For sure. Because I think, you know, all the people that I've met in this community, they're either marketing themselves as a brand for the sake of doing just that, or they're trying to sell the products that they make.
Yeah.
And one of the hardest barriers to selling something is being able to sell the idea of yourself or your product. And the way you do that is through marketing. So it is kind of cool to see so many people using Instagram just to share their work, because that's what they're doing every time they post. They are marketing themselves.
Yeah. And as you were getting more into it, did you know you wanted to build a brand around what you were doing to also kind of go that route to whether it's marketing to sponsors or even selling like plans and stuff on your own end?
I didn't at all know. I was just in it to make stuff, really.
Yeah.
But as I was doing that and I was slapping together 2x4s from Home Depot, I realized that I had a passion to learn some of the more refined techniques of woodworking and to be a fine woodworker. And there was only so much that I could get off of the countless hours of YouTube that I was watching. So I reached out to a local guy in my area in Indianapolis who coincidentally is named Guy. I always do that every time I tell this story.
Yeah.
So I met Guy Dunlap of Guy's Woodshop in Indianapolis. And he happened to live like 2 minutes from my house. And I went over there and we met each other, showed him some of my work, and we became friends. But he encouraged me to start sharing my stuff online on Instagram. He's like, you know, you've got some cool projects here. This would be a really good way for you to tap into the community and learn some things, because that's exactly what I was trying to do when I met him.
Yeah.
And so I did that. And that was about 18 months ago, July of the year before last, 2017. And I think my background in marketing and just my kind of my passion for taking photos and doing video work allowed me to accelerate on the platform pretty quickly. And in under a year, I was able to amass like 60,000 followers and meet all these amazing people. And it's just been really great.
Yeah, that's wild. Yeah, I had a guy on my podcast. I'm just looking it up. It was like December of 2017. So he was one of my like earlier ones.
Yeah. He's an awesome dude. He's got a just wealth of knowledge.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's also not afraid to tell you how it is. So there's been plenty of times where I'll show up at his house and he'll like cuss me out for the first 10 minutes, but it's all
I know. What's kind of funny is that, and so for people that aren't familiar with the guy, I mean, he's probably what, 50s? Is that, or somewhere around there?
He's 54, I believe. 54? Okay. And I only know that because on my podcast, I said that I thought he was 65, and then I got a talking to him about that.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad I at least got the decade right. And so I think it's kind of funny that he was the one giving you advice on like social media almost.
For sure.
That's pretty funny.
I will say though, after a few months and I got my bearings, the tables turned there and I was able to help him out a little bit with some of the stuff he was posting.
Yeah, it sounds like you had all of the tools in a bag, and he's like, why don't you use these tools on this too? And so like all the stuff you have been doing, you're like, you know, you can apply this to this too. That's neat. But so on the Instagram thing, since we're talking about it, and you probably get this question a good bit, but when, or if someone's like starting out now, or they're thinking about wanting to get a little more serious about the business side of things, especially in the maker community, what are the things you see people do wrong?
Yeah, I think it all depends on what your goal is. A lot of people use the platform for a lot of different reasons. And so depending on what somebody's goal is would then influence whether or not they're doing things correctly, in my opinion. For people selling products, I think having that feed that is a portfolio type feed that just shows a lot of finished work and also has a little bit of engagement with the people that do follow your account to make sure that they know that you're always willing and able to, you know, service their needs with the products that you create. Being able to do something like that, it will be a home run, whether you have 1,000 followers or 20,000, because at the end of the day, you just have to find the people that are going to buy your stuff. If you want to meet people, you don't have to post any good content. You just need to put yourself out there and start engaging with people.
Yeah.
And so I think that's really important. But if you are like me and you're using your account to build a brand and to try to grow it as big as possible with quality at the same time. I think really just taking a step back to think about, you know, the production of your content can do a lot for you. So what I mean by that is not just posting anything and everything you can think of, but being a little bit more deliberate about what you're putting out there so that everything kind of tells a story about what people are getting when they decide to come to your page.
Because your stuff like looks, it's definitely super cohesive in like the stuff that you post. Do you have any advice? Like when I look at one of your pictures, I'm like, oh yeah, that's Mikey's stuff. Like, do you have any advice for that? Or is that just something that's kind of come out just because you've done it for so long?
Well, with the exception of having red woodpeckers tools in every post.
Especially that's, you know, that's part of mine. It. Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think, so if you want to grow on Instagram, the only way to do it is through video content today. It is historically a photo platform, but if you want to grow, you have to shoot video. And so when shooting video, just some key fundamental things I think are super important, like lighting. Get as much good light in your shop as possible so that when you are trying to take a video of different tasks, then you're able to do that effectively. Equipment for shooting video isn't that important as long as you have like the newest iPhone. The newest iPhone is always going to have great video. Otherwise, you know, you can start to dabble in some of the other tech for shooting videos. I shoot all my videos on a Sony mirrorless camera. It's one of their budget options. I think it was like $600, but, okay. Using that in combination with like a good lens for the focal length that I'm trying to shoot my videos at, which is kind of that up close, process shot, will just kind of put you on another level. But I'd say the number one thing that people can do, if they want to improve the content that they're putting out, is to invest in some lighting for your shop. And just overall, it's going to help you even when the camera's not on, because then you'll be able to see what you're doing.
That's a really good point. My day job, I do a lot of like video stuff. And when I was first getting into it, because I work for like a nonprofit and we didn't have really anybody doing that. And so I thought it was all like, oh, I need like the latest camera. Like, and then I'm shooting this room that has just zero lights in it. And I'm like, if this is going to be grainy, like regardless of how high I can turn like the ISO up. Yeah, the lights are crazy. What type of lights do you have in your shop? Was it like a custom something you brought in? And do you have actual like, studio video lights, or is it all this kind of LED shop lights up top?
Yeah, they're just LED shop lights. I have a few that I got from a buddy of mine that does like commercial lighting for high schools, but okay. That's just a few of the lights in my shop. The rest of them are all from Amazon. I bought like a 4-pack of these 4100K white LED lights, and they all plug into like a power strip. So oh, cool. You didn't even have to do any electrical.
Yeah.
And so you just mount them to the wall, plug them into a power strip, and then I've got them all connected to my Alexa, so I can walk into the shop.
That's awesome.
Oh no, I turned her on. Alexa, stop. I just walk into the shop and I can turn on the lights immediately.
That's sweet. Are they like the panels, or is it the long strips?
Yeah, the long strips.
Long strips. I need to do something like that. Mine's super dark.
Yeah, I think it's like $100 for four of them.
Oh, geez.
And I have an array of 16 in my shop, which I've got a pretty big shop. So
yeah. Yeah, that's not bad. Not bad at all. Mine's bad enough to where like the light that comes on your like garage door opener, like that's the one I have to have on in addition, because I just can't see like without it. So mine's pretty rough, but I got lots of windows in the day.
You know, it's pretty funny too, because I had been sharing some stuff on Instagram and my page was growing all right because I was putting in a ton of work for it. The first 6 months that I was using the platform, I posted twice a day, every day. And so there was a lot of content going out there and I was trying to use that to grow. But I still remember when I hung LED shop lights up for the first time, like a few months into sharing content on Instagram. And just immediately my engagement went up.
Yeah.
And it was the only thing that changed was that everything was lit better.
Yeah, that's awesome. So if anyone's taking anything away from this, you can quickly get 70,000 followers just with LED shop lights is yeah. All you need. But
and woodpecker squares.
And woodpecker squares, yeah. So just spend a few $100 and you're set. But no, I mean, the stuff you make is really cool. especially the short content. And you mentioned that it's a lot of like detail shots. Is there something particular you like look for? Or like even when you're building, do you already know like, okay, I'm going to be working on this and I'm going to be using this cool square. So I'm going to record this. Or is it something kind of happens after the fact for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it kind of varies. Really, I should probably be recording more content, but a lot of times I put the camera away and I'm just working in the shop. Because part of me doesn't want to make all of my woodworking about documenting it and putting it on the internet.
Yeah.
It's really important for me to be able to help people in the community who, whatever they're trying to do, if they're trying to start out as a woodworker, if they are trying to build a brand through content on a platform like Instagram, I want to be able to help them. But I've never geared my brand towards like educating others, really, because I don't know enough myself to do that. So I'm not making how-to videos. I'm not putting out plans for people to build their own stuff. So when I think about my content, I just want it to be entertaining. So if I have like a task where I am, you know, making a cut or setting up a jig or something like that, I want to film it in a way that's going to be entertaining and kind of tell a short little story is mostly what I go for.
Do you approach like the actual story part of Instagram in that same way?
For sure. I haven't been using it a lot lately, but in the past it was the best way for me to just communicate directly with the people that followed me.
Yeah.
So depending on what I was working on in the shop, I would always try to bring people along and share some of the behind the scenes. Like earlier this year, last year, I started welding. And so I decided I'm going to use the story feature on Instagram to take everybody along with like the whole journey. So I filmed myself in Home Depot buying a welder. I filmed myself taking it home and figuring out that the plug I had wasn't going to work. I filmed myself going back to Home Depot to find the right plug. I got it all wired up, and then I made my first weld all over like a 3-hour period, and it was all documented through my stories, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's fun. What? Because you have, I think, a few videos on YouTube.
yeah.
But it definitely seems like your like huge focus is on Instagram. Is it just you don't want to like play around with more than one thing? Because I mean, I know the video side of YouTube is it's a whole lot of work. But like talking about those kind of like story elements of like buying a welder, I could see a thumbnail like I just bought my first welder and the plug doesn't work or something like crazy like that.
For sure.
Is that something that you want to get into?
Almost or? More than anything, really? Do I want to. And I just make all of the stereotypical excuses as to why not, because I honestly have the time to do it these days. Since we moved to Texas, I work from home. And so I'm here all day. I get my job done and I have all the time in the world. But I, for some reason, just keep making excuses not to make that content. But there's nothing more that I would want than to be able to put YouTube content out there to entertain a lot of people and to be able to grow on that platform, because I truly am like a student of it. So many makers in our community I follow religiously and really just enjoy the platform of YouTube as a whole. I watch a lot of
it. Yeah, I'm the same way. Anything I think new, I'm going to YouTube pretty quick. So you definitely talked about cameras a good bit. Where do those kind of chops come from?
It's just always been something that I've been passionate about ever since I took photography class in high school and I developed my own film. That was like the only real creative outlet that I ever sought after when I was younger. And so being able to create content now that way has been something I really enjoyed. But I've done everything from, you know, photography class, doing that kind of stuff, to stealing my family's video camera back in the day so that me and my buddies could like jump over trash cans and try to be Johnny Knoxville.
Yes.
So I've been doing stuff with a video camera most of my life.
Do you have any of those videos posted anywhere online?
No, but there's enough embarrassing videos of me on the internet that people seem to find. So one day I'll post my House Hunters edition from like 5 years ago.
Yes, that'd be awesome. I think I have like an old MTV Cribs-esque of going through like a dorm room or something dumb. So that is hidden from the world.
My most recent video that I put out there that's kind of embarrassing is my family and I, for Christmas, we filmed a music video where we sang this Christmas song. which was a spinoff of a SNL skit. And so it's pretty funny. I've now archived it on my Instagram account, but have been telling people if they want to see it, I'll send them a link.
That I would definitely want to see that. That's awesome. So on, and you've mentioned it several times now, but to, I guess, help with the branding of your pictures, you have lots of red tools, and all the woodpecker stuff. I get super excited when I see, and to kind of broaden that out a little bit, like, how have you found like working with brands and doing all that kind of stuff? Has it been like what you expected? And woodpeckers specifically, just what's it been like kind of working with them?
Yeah, definitely. So I think like anybody, when you get into this and you kind of get involved in the community, and then you start to see people maybe receiving some free tools on the platform, and then you kind of want that same thing for yourself. So I've been through the whole gamut of the first free thing that I ever received because of Instagram was glue from Gorilla Glue. And yeah, I was super excited about that glue just because, I don't know, it's cool to get free stuff, right?
Yeah.
Well, as my following grew and I started to realize that I was kind of making a mini side business out of this, I wanted to make sure that I was only working with customers that I, or customers, with companies that I really liked. And the first time I got a woodpecker square, I felt like everybody else does. And I was like, wow, this was really expensive, but it's amazing. Like, there's no doubt that there was a lot of hard work and effort that went into this. And so at that point I was thinking, I would love to have the opportunity to work with them if I ever got the chance. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so last year at Workbench Con in Atlanta, I was there and, you know, I'd been talking to some of the companies that have showed up there, but my number one goal was to have a conversation with the folks at Woodpeckers. And they attended and they were talking to some folks. And so I finally went up to them and introduced myself. And their mission there was to find people to help them market their products on social media. So it was kind of a perfect opportunity for me to do my pitch.
Oh, cool.
And so what I did is I pitched them and I came up with an idea where they have their one-time tools, which are limited run tools that they put out a couple times a month. And then once the buying period is over, you can't get them anymore. And so that's kind of the bread and butter of their business and the way that they achieve exclusivity in the market. Well, I noticed that nobody ever sees those tools before they're given the opportunity to buy them. And then when they're given the opportunity to buy them, they have to wait like 3 or 4 months to even receive it.
Yeah,
you know? So I told them that they need to put those tools in the hands of people that are making things so that their customers can see them before they make a purchase decision. And long story short, they really liked that idea. I decided I really wanted to work with them because I love their tools, but then I also learned a little bit more about their business and how they're an American-run company that employs 100 people just outside of Cincinnati, Ohio. And their owner started the company on his back porch, and he's like a great guy. So it was a perfect fit.
That's cool. I didn't realize that their one-off tools were just for a couple months. Because, I mean, I feel like more recently I've seen them getting posted, Chris Salamone and a few other people. And there's always something like I've never heard of before. Yeah. That's, so they are, is it like it goes into like a vault and then they bring it back out?
Yeah, basically. And okay, they'll bring them back out. So every couple of years you can buy that tool again and they'll do another run of it. But the way it works is they will introduce a tool that they designed in-house. And for the next 2 to 3 weeks, you'll have the opportunity to buy it. And then they take all those orders and then they only make as many of them as were ordered.
Oh, wow.
So after the order period is over is when they start manufacturing them and then they send them out to everybody.
That's crazy. I've never heard of a tool company doing something like that. Yeah. That's genius. That's because you get the whole, you got to buy now before it's over. And then, then they're not.
I mean, it makes a lot of people mad.
Yeah.
Especially if you combine that with the price of their tools. But once you've been to their facility in Strongsville, Ohio, and you've seen the amount of effort that goes into the design and manufacturing of these tools, you'll never bat an eye at the price of them again. It's truly amazing.
Yeah, their stuff is wild. Do you know Winston Moy by chance? He does a lot of like...
I do. Okay. Yeah, I had him in my shop just a few weeks ago as he was making his cross-country trip.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I was watching his recap. I must have just skipped that part or didn't see that part when he was with you. Because I was at Maker Faire in New York and I was talking with him. And that was before I think he was doing the trip. And that he had, I think that was the first time, because he went to the Woodpecker shop and that was the first time I saw inside of it. And he was getting like super geeky on the CNC stuff. And I'm like, this is wild what they're making.
Yeah, they've got this room that, and I don't know any of the technical terms, but it's got an optical laser in it that like literally checks all of the tools for that, like whatever accuracy they tout it being. So it's pretty mind blowing.
That's wild. So of all of your woodpecker tools, what do you use the most? Maybe not what your favorite is, but what do you find you actually wind up using the most?
Probably the 1281 square, which is just a 12-inch right angle square that is available all the time from them.
Yeah.
That seems to be the one that I grab the most.
What is the weirdest one that you have?
That's a good question. Because I have a lot of them. As a part of my relationship with them, they send me a lot of their tools. And I don't know, the weirdest one. There's a couple, like, there's one that's just like this right angle, and it's got all the different degrees to check your bevel angles of a chisel, which is super useful, but just like a funny tool to me, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. There's always something that's like a really like a niche case when I see it and I'm like, oh, that's genius. But I'm like, I never would have thought there was a tool out there that would do something like that.
For sure.
That's sweet. And then it might've been on your guys' most recent podcast, but I was listening to transition back to your day job. You're also going to be helping them on a more, I guess, professional side of things as well. Is that right? With their marketing?
Yeah. So, last year, it was a pretty funny story. I had a guy that I work with at Salesforce who's based in San Francisco send me an email and basically said, "Hey, Mike, I reached out to woodpeckers because I'm a woodworker and I realized that their marketing on their website is really poor and I wanted to help them out." And so I sent them an email to see what I could do just as a fan of their brand and then somebody in a capacity at a company that specializes in something like this. And they responded and they were like, "Do you know Mike Osborne?" And he was like, "No," because there's 30,000 people that work at our company worldwide.
That's funny.
And long story short, we got hooked up together and we were going to try to bring them onto Salesforce to make them more successful. But they ended up deciding not to do it. So they're still using their marketing provider.
Gotcha.
But it was a pretty small world type situation.
Yeah, yeah. But then on the side gig, you were very deep, sounds like, working.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, and then I was always joking with my boss. I didn't know if it was like a conflict of interest or not, but, you know.
You're like, I'm still going to keep getting freak tools, so we'll figure it out. So do you work with like any other companies, like on a sponsorship side of things, or is it?
Yeah, not on a regular basis. I've done a handful of sponsorships, mostly facilitated through like a third-party agency who's working on behalf of a brand. And generally the way that that relationship will go is that I'll receive an email and they'll say, "Hey, we've got so-and-so brand that wants to market these tools, and you know, we'll pay you to do 3 posts on them. We'll send you the tool first so that you can make sure that you feel comfortable promoting it." And then it usually works like that. But as far as a long-term sponsorship deal, Woodpeckers is the only company that I work with in that capacity.
Is all of that, like, is that a longer-term thing, like you want to get more into? Like, do you want the woodworking and all the content stuff to be more of a full-time deal, or do you like kind of the balance that you're doing right now?
Yeah, I like the balance. I think one thing that I do have passion for and where I could be of more value to brands in our community would be more on the consulting side. I mean, I do that for my day job anyway, but because I have an intimate knowledge of the community of woodworkers and makers, and then what it takes to market to people effectively, I think I could be a pretty big asset to a lot of these companies that are still trying to figure out this whole social media thing.
Yeah.
So that they're not just spinning their wheels and spending money on things that are not effective.
Sounds like you just need to start your own like maker agency, like maker yeah, like right? company agency or something.
Yeah, and I'll just represent a bunch of people that make content.
Yeah, so. Yeah, yeah. And then you could have the companies, you could be pushing their stuff too. That's cool. And so before we started, I think it was before we started recording, but you were talking about WorkbenchCon and how it sounds like you got pretty involved with them last year on the marketing side of things, but like kind of like how did that come about? And then for people that aren't familiar with WorkbenchCon, it's coming up what, just a few weeks, right?
Yeah, February 21st to 23rd in Atlanta. And WorkbenchCon is a conference for makers and woodworkers and DIYers, anybody who likes to make stuff and is interested in turning that into a business, whether that business is to make content around what you make or to sell the products that you make as well.
And so you mentioned that last year it was kind of like a cold reach out when you saw some of their stuff. Like how did you, because I feel like I saw everybody posting about it when it was actually happening. That's all my Instagram was definitely. For like 2 or 3 weeks. What is that process of having a cool event, but then reaching out to the community, connecting those people together? What does that kind of look like?
Yeah, it was pretty interesting because I was still so new to this that, you know, I spent all day, every day on Instagram. That was kind of like where I got all my information about woodworking and the community. And one day I saw a random post, I think by like Four Eyes or his crew from their podcast yeah. about the event. And I was like, wow, this is really interesting. And so I went to their page and I noticed there wasn't a lot of content there, a lot of information. And I was like, well, you know, it seems like they haven't really started to market this thing. There's probably an opportunity for me to help. So I reached out to the organizer and got involved then. And last year, before the event, I ran their Instagram account all the way up until the event to help try to get more eyes on it and get people there. And so we had a really successful show last year. We had 180 attendees. We had a really awesome space and some just tremendous speakers that came and shared a ton of knowledge. And so it was really cool being a part of it. But that's just a perfect example of like kind of putting yourself out there to try to be involved in something that you're interested in.
Was that your first time like really being around that maker community?
It was. And I'll tell you, I was able to handle it all pretty well until the first night of the show when I sat across from Jimmy Duresta and I started like sweating on my palms. And I was like, man, what am I going to do? This is pretty nerve-wracking. I love this dude.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he stood up and he stuck his hand out. He's like, hey, have I met you somewhere? And so, like, of course, he immediately disarmed me. And we've been friends ever since.
Yeah, Jimmy's he's a great guy. I edit their podcast, so Making It.
Oh, I didn't know that you were the one that did that, Brandon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I hadn't met any of them, Bob or Jimmy or David. And so at Maker Faire, Bob and Jimmy were both there. And I remember, because I've done like a face-to-face with Bob before, but Jimmy I'd never actually met. And it was that same kind of deal. I'm like, I don't know what to tell you because you do so much crazy stuff. But yeah, he's so disarming and super nice.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Have you been, you've been up to his shop and stuff too, right?
I haven't been to his shop, but a few weeks after WorkbenchCon, I was in New York City for work. And I just sent him a message on a whim, and he took me to dinner that night. We walked the whole city. It was pretty cool. And then he was up in Indianapolis over the summer last year, and he came by my shop, and we hung out there, which was pretty cool as well.
Yeah, that's sweet. All right, so kind of getting a little bit towards the end here, talking about the future a little bit. So I'm looking at your Instagram right now, and it's like you're at almost 78,000 followers, which is wild. But as you think about like next year and a few years out, do you see more of the same, just bigger, or are there like, even on the making side of things, are there things you want to get into? You've already mentioned welding that you're excited about for this year.
Well, you know, I think that's a really good question because I feel that I'm at kind of an inflection point. Because I poured so much of myself into this over the last 2 years, and now I'm at a place where I have this amazing shop. I have an amazing network of people that I've met through the community, and I've made a lot of stuff too. that I'm not quite sure where I want to take it. And that's kind of resulted in me taking a step back over the last month or two, I would say. Yeah. So, you know, that's a really good question and something that I'm hoping over the next month or so that I can start to figure out the answer to figure out kind of where I want to take this, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And it sounds like you're going to have a great opportunity to think through that in Atlanta with a bunch of...
I think WorkbenchCon will be where I get my groove back.
Yeah, yeah. So are you actually building something right now, or is that kind of part of the hiatus?
Yeah, I am actually. So as a part of moving into our new home in Houston, my wife has had a long list of projects for me to do. And so I've built a live edge slab dining table, a coffee table, and then I did a entertainment center for our TV. And right now I'm working on a cabinet that will house one of those glass door barred fridges.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And then like a wine rack and stuff like that. So I'm working on that right now.
So a lot of like stuff for the house.
Yeah.
Was there something you built that got your wife on board? Like she was like, oh, I get like what you're doing now because you're starting to bring cool stuff in.
You know, she has been so supportive the whole time of me making everything. But I don't know, you know, I don't think there was a specific thing that she was like, oh, you actually know what you're doing because she's always been really supportive. But I will tell you that support turned more into her being like the foreman of the shop.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Once we moved into this new house and I actually had to make things for her.
Yeah. Yeah. I was asking because when I was first getting more into it, I made like an outdoor like swinging bed, just like pocket hole and 2x4s and stuff. But I put it up before my wife got home. And then when she sat on it, she's like, I definitely did not think this was actually going to hold me up. But ever since then, she's like, oh, okay, I think you're not quite as crazy as when you're talking about doing all this stuff.
Yeah, but I've been lucky because I've talked to a lot of people that sometimes they don't get as much support from their spouses. And I think that would be hard. But luckily, my wife has been super supportive.
Yeah.
Even for my crazy tool buying addiction.
Yeah. But it looks cool. And so you get sent cool stuff, sounds like. But, well, sweet man. Well, I appreciate your time and all the back and forth. And even people don't know the technical stuff on the front end of even this call. And for people that do want to see what you're doing, just Mikey the Maker all over website and Instagram.
Yeah, MikeyTheMaker.com, Mikey the Maker on Instagram, Mikey the Maker on Twitter and YouTube. And if you guys are interested and you like Brandon's show, would definitely love to have you hop over and listen to the If You Build It podcast that I do with Kyle Stumpenhorst of RR Buildings and Ed Ford of Shape Poco.
Totally. Okay. So yeah, then you definitely know carbide people then. Okay. Because I've seen you wearing like carbide stuff and that makes way more sense. That's cool.
Ed Ford and I are long lost brothers, I would say.
That's cool. They're doing some super cool stuff over there. Well, cool.
Definitely.
Well, I appreciate your time, and all those links I'll include in the show notes for people that are listening. But thank you so much for the time.
Yeah, thanks. Take care.
All right. Thanks for hanging around to the end. This is where I give you guys a quick update about the things I've got going inside of my own shop. It hasn't been super busy in the last week. I was actually out of town at a conference for work, helping to put it on. But I have been pretty excited. I can't remember if I mentioned it in the last update, but the laser's pretty much rocking and rolling. There's still some weird software issues I have to kind of like play around, but I can have a design. I can get it to the software, and then I can send that to the laser, and then I can cut it out. So I feel like now I'm at the point of actually figuring out the speeds and the power and all that kind of stuff, like what this thing can actually do. I'm going to be working on a video this weekend, and I'm going to try to get it up next week all about this 50-watt laser. I've got lots of questions. And so you guys can hopefully get some answers from someone who has just gotten it, and there's some good ones out there for people that are way down the road. But this is just kind of first impressions and some of the things I've had to do to get it rolling and kind of compare that to hopefully the 40-watt version of this, which is way cheaper, but there's a lot of, I think, modifications you got to do to get it rolling to a pretty safe and consistent point. So that is what is going on in the other big project that's going to be coming right after that is I'm about to be buying a ton of plywood. We are going to be making a little play kitchen for my daughter. And so that should be a really fun one. That's going to be a full-out design I've done in Fusion 360 that I'll have available if you guys want to check it out. And then I'll be working on basically ripping all those pieces down and put it together, painting it for her birthday, which is coming up in about a month. So that's what I've got going on. I'd love to know the things you have going inside of your own shop. Be sure and hit me up over at the Make or Break shop. If you're working on something cool, make sure and tag me, and I'd love to feature it here in the future. So until next time, go make or break something in your shop. See you guys.